He disappeared into the general store and returned 5 minutes later with a bag of pastries, which he dumped onto the seat between them, like a pirate's treasure. There were chocolate chip cookies, cherry turnovers, and huckleberry bear claws. It was far more food than the two of them could eat. Zoe unwrapped a bear claw and began to devour it, licking the frosting off her fingers. She hadn't realized how hungry she was. "When we're finished with Silver Teardrop, I want to go see Black Teardrop, okay?" she said. "I haven't seen it since..." She trailed off, and Dallas finished the sentence for her.
"Since we looked for your dad?"
"Yeah," she said.
"You really ready to see that place again?" said Dallas.
Zoe laughed. She wasn't sure why. Maybe it was the sugar. "Who knows?" she said. They left Polebridge and drove the last 10 miles to Silver Teardrop, the car bucking and rattling over the road. The forest in this part of the mountains had recently burned. The trees were stripped in charcoal black and rose out of the snow naked as needles. They reminded Zoe of the woods near Bert and Betty's house, of course. And that reminded her of chasing Jonah and the dogs through the blizzard, of meeting X, of meeting Stan. It was just like Dallas said. Everything was connected. Silver Teardrop lay under a frozen creek bed that ran alongside the road. There was nowhere to park. Dallas drove an extra half mile, and finally the road widened enough for him to pull over. For the next 5 minutes, he blared Kanye West's song Monster at top volume, which seemed to be a pre-caving ritual of his. Zoe stood outside the truck, watching in amusement as Dallas duplicated every move from the video. Finally, the tune ended. Dallas emerged from the truck, red-faced and beaming.
"Hoot!"
he shouted. Not so much to Zoe as to the universe. He gestured for Zoe to follow him. He walked to the back of the 4Runner and opened it with a flourish.
"Behold," he said.
Zoe couldn't speak for a moment. It was a gearhead's paradise. There were beautiful coils of rope hanging from hooks. There were drills, bolt kits, harnesses, ascenders and descenders, caving packs with holes in the bottom so water could drain out. There were folding shovels and gleaming ice axes. There were whole unopened boxes of cliff bars and camelbacks full of water. Everything was meticulously curated and cared for. Everything was shiny. Zoe's dad always used as little gear as he could get away with. He liked to improvise, and he was kind of a slob. Dallas had 4 identical orange helmets. He even had a stack of jumpsuits, which were a lighter shade of orange. They appeared to have been ironed.
"Turns out I have a little OCD," said Dallas.
Zoe didn't want him to feel self-conscious. "No more than, like, a serial killer," she said. Dallas took a jumpsuit from the pile, popped it open, and stepped into it. The suit used to have a breast pocket, but Dallas had removed it so it wouldn't fill with mud when he crawled. The front of the suit had tiny holes in the shape of a U where the pocket used to be. Next, Dallas inspected the row of helmets. Zoe wondered how he could even tell them apart. Finally, he picked one, rigged it with an LED headlamp, and strapped it on. He was square-jawed and handsome in his orange helmet and suit ensemble.
"How do I look?" he said.
"Like a Lego," said Zoe. She put on her own jumpsuit, which had been crushed in a ball at the bottom of her duffel. It was off-white and so stained with mud that it looked like an abstract painting. Her helmet came next. Her dad had given it to her when she turned 15. It was dark blue and scarred from low ceilings and falling rock. It was slightly too big and poorly padded. Whenever she nodded, it did a dance on her head. For 10 minutes, Dallas and Zoe geared up. Everything Dallas owned seemed to have been scientifically engineered. Even his gloves looked like something you'd use to repair a space station. Zoe's stuff was all shabby crap from the land of misfit clothes. But Dallas didn't judge her.
and she didn't embarrass easily anyway. She pulled on her yellow dishwashing gloves like they were made of silk. Zoe and Dallas double-checked their headlamps, their batteries, their backup batteries, their drill. Dallas got pissed when he realized that he'd forgotten to bring walkie-talkies. Fortunately, Zoe had thought to pack a pair. She dug them out of her duffel and handed him one. "Please come prepared next time," she said. Dallas locked up the Forerunner. Cheep, cheep. And they hiked back down the road, trudging along stiffly under all the layers of clothes. After a few minutes, they came around a bend and saw some deer in the snow up ahead. The deer's eyes were wet and nervous. Their coats, thin and red in summer, had turned coarse and gray to survive the cold and hunting season. They stared at Dallas and Zoe, then darted away, jumping high like horses on a carousel. In the silence, Zoe's anxiety began to seep back in. She tried to clear her mind, but couldn't. A story her dad had told her when she was 10 or 11 came back to her, and the minute she remembered it, she couldn't shake it. The story was about British cavers in the 60s who got caught underground when a freak thunderstorm flooded their cave. She'd never forgotten the details. Rescuers came running from their pubs. They built a dam, but it kept collapsing, so they had to hold it together with their bodies. They worked through the night to pump out the water. Finally, they wriggled into a small tunnel to search for survivors. Deep in the cave, the lead rescuer found the bodies of 2 dead cavers blocking the way. He had to crawl over them to find the others. They were just corpses now, too. The last of them had squeezed into a tight fissure in a desperate hunt for air. The lead rescuer began his retreat, knowing all was lost. The volunteers behind him were crying and throwing up in the passageway. He said to the first one he saw, "Go back, Jim. They're dead." Dallas noticed that Zoe wasn't talking. "What are you thinking about?" he said. "The British cavers," she said. "The dead guys in the tunnel? Those British cavers?" he said. There wasn't a caving legend that Dallas didn't know.
"That's a horrible thing to think about, dog. Hit delete right now, seriously."
Zoe shoved the story into the Do Not Open box. It didn't want to go in. It wrestled with her. But eventually it did. She imagined herself sitting on the box to keep the thing trapped. But still she felt unsettled as they trudged through the wilderness. Between the silence and the snow and the burned-out forests sliding past, Zoe felt like she and Dallas were characters in some post-apocalyptic movie, survivors of a deadly virus that only they were immune to. Dallas didn't seem remotely nervous. He never did. He seemed stoked, giddy almost, oblivious. They were within arm's reach of each other, but still miles apart.
"It's this way," said Dallas, who'd been staring down at his GPS.
He thrust a fist in the air.
"Woot!"
He led her to the side of the road and down the steep embankment. If there had ever been a trail, it was buried now. The slope was piled with fallen trees, which plows had shoved off the road. Their trunks were charred and blistered. Zoe struggled to climb over the logs. The weight of her pack kept pulling her off balance. Getting to the cave was supposed to be the easy part. Dallas was just ahead of her. She tried to step exactly where he stepped. She started to sweat under her clothes. She was near the bottom of the embankment when her snowshoe landed on a rotten log. She had a sick feeling, like the ground was disappearing.
It was.
She pitched forward, her arms churning helplessly. Dallas was still babbling. He had no idea. Zoe fell toward his back, arms outstretched and grabbing at the air. A branch shot past her face. It missed her eye by an inch. She crashed against Dallas. He gave a grunt of surprise, then fell forward too. The whole thing took only an instant. Less than an instant. The sky spun above Zoe's head, She landed on her side in the snow. She heard a sharp, dry crack, the sound of a bone splintering, and waited for the pain. But it never came. Dallas lay in a heap a few feet away. He'd tried to break his fall with his hands. He was clutching his wrist. His mouth was an O, and he was about to scream. Dallas insisted that Zoe could crush Silver Teardrop without him. He was not going to wreck the day for her. It was too huge. He popped some Advil from his pack and sat on his butt at the bottom of the embankment. His wrist plunged in the snow to stop the swelling. He swore he was fine, that it was probably just a sprain and that he'd only screamed because of the shock. Zoe argued with him and lost. They followed the creek bed a while, and soon the GPS informed them that they'd arrived at their destination. Zoe saw nothing resembling a cave. The entrance had to be deep under snow. She and Dallas removed their snowshoes and climbed down to the frozen creek. A couple hundred feet up, it ran into a rocky hill and slipped underground. Zoe helped Dallas off with his pack, took out a folding shovel, and began to clear the mouth of the cave. Dallas insisted on helping. He'd filled a pocket with snow and he kept his right hand buried in it as he hacked away at the entrance with an ice axe. They worked slowly to conserve their energy. They didn't talk much, although at one point, Dallas looked at Zoe's yellow rubber gloves, shook his head, and said, "Can I please give you a better pair? I promise to give yours back if we have to wash any dishes." Zoe's fingers were already so cold they seemed to be burning. She nodded so forcefully that Dallas cracked up. When they'd cleared the snow, they found a dense wall of ice blocking the mouth of the cave, as if defending it from intruders. They chipped at it for half an hour. Zoe's arm began to ache. Shards of ice flew up at her face. But as the entrance of the cave emerged from the ice, she found she was grinning like an idiot. She locked eyes with Dallas. Even injured, he had the same loopy, blissed-out expression. "Right?" he said happily. The map hadn't done justice to how narrow the entrance was. It was shaped roughly like a keyhole, and not much more than 2 feet wide. "Man, that's tight," said Dallas. "I couldn't have gotten in there without scraping my junk off." "Thank you for that image," said Zoe. She and Dallas crouched down, and their headlamps flooded the tunnel. The ceiling was slick with condensation, the floor littered with broken rock and bubbles of calcite that cavers called popcorn. But none of this was as troubling as the fact that the tunnel never seemed to widen. Zoe would have to crawl down a meandering 50-foot corridor on her side. Neither of them spoke. And while they were not speaking, a giant wood rat wandered into the light and stared up at them indifferently. "You got this," said Dallas. "I know," said Zoe. She thought of the tattoo on his shoulder. "Never don't stop, right?" "Exactly," said Dallas. "Never, ever don't stop." He hesitated. "Unless," he said. Zoe had never seen Dallas hesitate. "Do not mess with my head 2 seconds before I go in there," she said, "or I will scrape your junk off myself." "No, no, no, you got this," said Dallas. "But if you get in there and there's a shit ton of running water, you gotta get out. Promise me you won't get all intrepid." Zoe promised, but they both knew she was lying. She put on her seat harness and descender. Dallas double-checked them so carefully, it actually made her more nervous. He was acting like she was about to jump out of a plane. Zoe tested her walkie-talkie. All she had to do now was stop stalling. She took a last breath of fresh air. The first 10 feet of the cave were furry with ice. Her father's voice popped into her head like a cartoon bubble. "That's hoarfrost, Zoe, also known as white frost. Come on."
Know your frosts.
She ducked into the tunnel and lay down on her side. She shimmied forward like a snake, pushing a fat coil of rope and a small pack in front of her. The passage was insanely claustrophobic. The walls were like a clamp. She made it about 5 feet before the back of her neck was slick with sweat. She could already hear the waterfall pounding up ahead. She thought of the British cavers who drowned. She couldn't help it. And of the men who rushed from their pubs and tried to save them. Go back, Jim. They're dead. She had to focus. That's the first thing you learned as a caver. You focus or you get hurt. Actually, the first thing you learned was that it was nuts to go caving without at least 2 other people. That way, if someone got injured, one person could stay with her and the other could run for help. She twisted her legs so she could push with both feet. She dragged her body over the rubble and calcite. Even through a wetsuit and 4 layers of clothes, she could feel them bite. When the tunnel grew even narrower, she filled her lungs with air, then released it so her chest would shrink, and she could keep crawling. She made it another 5 or 6 feet. She had to crane her neck to see where she was going. Her helmet bobbled and scraped along the ground. Every so often it scooped up a stone and she had to shake her head until it tumbled back out. In the distance, the waterfall grew louder. She'd forgotten how ferocious water sounded in an enclosed space, how it got your heart drumming even if you weren't afraid. And then it struck her. She didn't have to be afraid. She was cold. Her body was tense as a wire. She felt like she was crawling into an animal's throat. But she didn't have to be scared. She knew how to do this. She loved doing this. And she wasn't even alone. Not really. She had a whole support team in her brain. Dallas, Jonah, X, even her dad in a way. Especially her dad. You're freaking awesome! You can do this! You're my girl! She arrived at a bend in the tunnel and wriggled around it. She imagined she was a superhero who could transform into water or molten steel, who could flow through the rock and then reconstitute at will. Her stupid grin was back. Suddenly, the walkie-talkie trilled. By the time Zoe finished the laborious task of taking off her glove and fishing the thing out of her pack, it had stopped. Annoyed, she called Dallas back. "I'm being molten steel," she said. "What could you possibly want?" There was a pause during which Dallas presumably tried to figure out what the hell she was talking about. When he answered, his voice was so distorted that she had to work to fill in the missing words. "Where you at?" he said. "You killing it? Can you hear the water?" "Of course I'm killing it," she told him. "Go away." She slid the walkie-talkie back into her pack, wiped her nose, and put her glove back on. Even in that brief interval, her hand had become stiff with the cold, and she had to flex her fingers to get some life back in them. Just ahead, 1,000 daddy long legs hung from the ceiling in a clump, their legs packed in such a dense mass that they looked like dirty hair. Zoe was used to spiders, but she was surprised to see them so late in February. She slid under them and squinted up. She heard her father's voice again. "Daddy long legs aren't spiders, Zoe. They're Opilionis. Come on. This is Insects 101. When she was small, 5, maybe 6, her dad gave her an ecstatic lecture about this stuff. There were 2 things she'd always remembered. The first was how her father's face glowed with excitement. The second was a gruesome tidbit about how Daddy Longlegs could play dead by detaching one of their legs to trick predators. They'd leave it behind, still twitching, while they crawled in the opposite direction. Only her father could have thought that was a cool thing to tell a little kid. And yet it kind of was. Zoe shook her head and smiled. Her helmet did its dance. She'd already lost track of how long she'd been in the cave. Time had a way of shattering underground. The waterfall roared even louder now. She kept crawling in the dark, telling herself to focus. The tunnel finally widened, then stopped at the edge of the giant drop that led down to the chandelier room. Zoe rolled onto her stomach. She lowered her head to the ground and exhaled gratefully, like a swimmer who had just barely made it back to the beach. Her neck ached. The left side of her body felt ravaged. She dreaded looking at the bruises. Were superheroes supposed to get this tired? She rotated her head slowly, her headlamp sweeping the walls. There were bolts on either side of her that another caver had left in the rock. A primary and a backup. She unspooled her rope and rigged up with loops like bunny ears. She struck the bolts with a buckle and leaned close to hear the solid, reassuring ping. There were still 5 feet between Zoe and the giant shaft that plunged down to the chandelier room. She pushed herself up into a sort of golem-like crouch and inched toward it, hoping the waterfall wouldn't be as ferocious as it sounded. The shaft was roughly circular. Its walls were jagged and embedded with pockets of ice that glinted in the light of Zoe's headlamp. Off to her right, an underground river burst through an icy hole in the wall, then tumbled down, like Rapunzel's hair. It wasn't the trickle that she and Dallas had hoped for. She was glad he wasn't there to say, "Forget it, dog, this is way too intrepid." She was sure that if she rappelled straight down, she could avoid most of the spray. She tested the bolts in the wall again, though it didn't tell her anything definitive. If they were going to pop out, they were going to pop out when she was hanging in midair. She hooked herself onto the rope. She took a deep breath and turned around. She stepped backward off the edge. She could have cried with joy when the soles of her boots found the wall. She began to descend, slowly, cautiously, just a couple feet at a time. Her right hand never left the brake. A cold cloud of mist from the waterfall enveloped her. The noise was immense. Her heart thumped even louder. It was like she was being chased. She tried to ignore the waterfall, but it was shooting out of the wall with the force of a fire hydrant. Water splashed her boots as she descended. The spray crept up her body, drenching her legs, her arms, her chest. She was grateful for the wetsuit beneath her clothes. She fought the impulse to drop faster, to drop farther, to free fall to the bottom. The water found her neck now, her face. It was so frigid it felt like a claw against her skin. She twisted away. She needed a new plan. She needed to get farther away from the falls. Zoe began inching sideways, away from the torrent. She was descending at an angle now, like a pendulum. The muscles in her legs were objecting, tensing up, sending out warning shots of pain. The rope was scraping against the rocks. Zoe crept 5 or 6 feet sideways, but still the spray lashed at her. If she could just make it a couple more feet. She reached out with the toe of her right boot. It landed on ice. She slipped. Her heart flew into her mouth. She felt herself being yanked back toward the falls, her body twirling like a top. She couldn't stop, couldn't find anything to grab. Up above her, the rope sawed against the edge of the cliff. Zoe was swinging so hard she was pulled under the falls. The water pounded her back, furious and cold. It banged on her rickety helmet. It soaked every part of her. She tried to move, to push off the wall, to do something, anything. But her body was rigid with shock, and suddenly there was a terrible flower blooming in her head. "This is how my father died," terrified and swinging on a rope. At last, the rope pulled her back out of the water, as if it had all been gravity's way of telling her that the only way down was straight. Zoe hung suspended for a moment, tears clouding her eyes. She felt shaken, stupid, humiliated. The walkie-talkie trilled in her pack. Did Dallas somehow know what had happened? Had she shouted and not known it? Had he heard her? He couldn't have. She didn't answer. Dallas would hear the shakiness in her voice and tell her to come out. She was fine now. She was fine. But for a sliver of a moment, it felt like the bottom had dropped out of the world, and she was hurtling downward. She took the glove off her right hand, tearing at the Velcro with her teeth. She dropped it into the darkness. She inspected her harness and her brake. The metal was so cold it seemed electrically charged. She brushed the ice off everything as best she could. Her heart was galloping. She couldn't get the thought of her father out of her head. This is how he died. She found herself staring at her bare right hand, weirdly fascinated by it, as if it didn't belong to her. There'd been blood and skin on her dad's rope. Was it from his hands? From his neck? Had the rope wound around his throat? Had it choked him? Suffocated him? Like he was a baby trying to be born? She was sobbing now. She would have made an awful noise if there hadn't been a torrent of water spilling along with her tears. The walkie-talkie rang again, and she answered it angrily. Can you please leave me alone, please?
Can I... What?
Said Dallas. The explosions of static were worse than ever. Can you please leave me alone for a second? She said.
Can I what for a what?
Said Dallas. Screw it, she thought. Zoe dropped the walkie-talkie now, too. She didn't hear it land, but pictured it smashing on the rock down below, the battery springing out and skittering across the floor of the cave. She turned off her headlamp. She just wanted to hang in the dark a moment. She didn't care about the spray from the waterfall. She couldn't get any wetter. The darkness was absolute. It was as if the water, with its astonishing noise, had decimated all her other senses. She thought of her dad. She thought of X. She thought of how they'd both be extremely concerned about the borderline crazy adventure she was embarked on. It was so strange that they would never meet. One had exited her life just as the other entered it. They'd brushed past each other, missing each other by moments. Zoe twisted slowly on the rope in the dark. She concentrated on the water now. She tried to pick it apart, tried to hear every tiny sound in the middle of the roar. She let the relentlessness of the noise drive all thoughts out of her head, to douse them like fires, one after the other. Her heartbeat began to slow. Her breathing got deeper. Later, she couldn't have said how long it had been. She switched her headlamp back on and continued her descent. The ice in the rock sparkled all the way down. The chandelier room was breathtaking. Zoe's eyes didn't know what to devour first. In the middle of the chamber, there was a giant boulder encased in translucent ice. The waterfall struck it dead center, then splashed in every direction like a demented fountain. The walls were coated in ice as well. Here, though, the ice was as thick and wavy as cake frosting, and it glowed with the sleepy blue-green light of an aquarium. Every 20 feet or so, there were massive, almost melted-looking columns of rock. Her father wouldn't shut up today. They're not columns of rock, Zoe. They're limestone pillars. Come on, respect your rocks. Zoe stepped carefully on the frozen floor, running her bare hands along every surface, then shoving them inside her jacket to warm. She was transfixed. Everything in the chamber seemed as ancient as the earth, yet somehow still evolving, still breathing, still being formed. And just when Zoe thought the chandelier room couldn't get any more mesmerizing, she looked up.
The ceiling was hung with icicles of every conceivable size. It looked like an upside-down forest, like some massive musical instrument that had yet to be invented. It was gorgeous. She swept her eyes along the ice, greedily. Her headlamp made the whole thing glow. It was only when Zoe felt something crunch under her feet, a shard of plastic from the walkie-talkie, that she remembered Dallas. He'd be up there, pacing around with his injured hand in his pocket, possibly freaking out. The walkie-talkie was busted beyond repair, but she collected all the bits she could find and stuffed them in her pack. She returned to where the rope hung down the shaft. It was covered with ice, so she thwacked it against the wall like she was beating a rug. Looking up, she could see fragments of the water, little jets and beads, catch the light of her headlamp as they fell. She hooked herself onto the rope once more and began to rise. Zoe crawled out of the cave 20 minutes later, dizzy and drenched. The crystals of frost at the entrance floated down on her shoulders like a goodbye present. She struggled to her feet, dropped her pack in the snow, and gulped in as much air as her lungs could hold. Her legs felt rickety. She wobbled like a newborn colt for the first few steps. Otherwise, she felt lighter in every way. She felt lifted. Dallas stepped toward her, beaming and offering an orange towel from his pack. He seemed not to know if he should hug her, so Zoe threw her arms around him and squeezed gratefully. "Thank you for bringing me here," said Zoe. She worried it wasn't sufficient, so she added, in his own language, "You're a full-on baller and a boss." "Thank you." She felt exhilarated. The air was lighting up her blood.
"Okay, okay," said Dallas, breaking off the hug. "You're starting to feel attracted to me. I warned you."
"How long was I down there?" she said. "Half an hour?"
2.5 hours, he said.
2.5 hours? Said Zoe. "I'm so sorry."
"Don't be, dog," said Dallas. "Shit like this is special."
Zoe took a picture of them in front of the entrance to the cave so she could Snapchat it to Val when she had a signal again. She scrawled a caption across the top in yellow. "Cave, silver teardrop, crushed by Zoe." Dallas's wrist was still buried in his pocket. He wouldn't show it to Zoe, so she assumed it was swollen and purple. He promised he was fine. He insisted they still go check out Black Teardrop. Maybe she was being selfish, but Zoe needed to see the place her father died, no matter how wet she was. She needed to see it right now, while the adrenaline was still racing around in her blood.
"We're just going to look today, right?" said Dallas. "We're just gonna say hello, or whatever. You're not gonna trick me and rig up?"
"No tricks," said Zoe. "But you have to promise that we'll come back if the police won't do their job."
"With a blanket," said Dallas. "For Jonah. I remember."
"Was that a promise?" said Zoe.
"That was a promise," said Dallas.
"Because now you know I'm not scared of any cave," said Zoe. Dallas's snowshoes thumped softly behind her.
"I knew that already," he said.
The hike to Black Teardrop was short, but exhausting. The snow rose in front of them in huge, untouched swells. Zoe could feel her back and legs complaining to each other, ready to mutiny. Her body recognized the cave before she did. She felt the storm gathering again in her stomach as they clomped over a final snowy rise and looked down to see the rocky gash in the earth. Black Teardrop was ringed with a chain-link fence now and hung with warning signs. The fence was about 8 feet tall, but more or less useless. The wind had blown it back and forth, so that whole sections tilted crazily, like loose teeth.
Zoe was surprised by how ordinary the cave appeared. It was just a hole in the ground. Still, the longer she stared at it, the more it seemed to be surrounded, not just by a fence, but by some kind of force field. She stared at it longer than she should have. Dallas had caught up and stood silently beside her. The cave lay a couple hundred feet in front of them. Zoe found it hard to move forward.
"I'd go with you," said Dallas. "But I can't get over that fence with one hand."
"No worries," she said. "I got this." Zoe clomped down the hill. The snow was powdery and deep. She paused at the fence. She didn't know what she was supposed to feel, but what she did feel was a confused rush of emotions, each of them struggling to get to the front of the line. Sadness, fury, fear. Zoe tried to give each of the emotions a moment in her heart. Wisps of warm air, which had been trapped inside the cave for months, slipped out the entrance. It looked like a mouth exhaling smoke. It was as if there were a dragon in there, rather than her father's body. She dropped her pack, unstrapped her snowshoes, and climbed the fence. Once again, she could tell that the muscles in her legs hated the idea. Still, they obeyed, and soon she was dropping over the other side. Now the only problem was that she didn't know why she had come, or what she intended to do. She forced herself forward. On the ground, close to the entrance, there were two objects just barely peeking out of the snow. She knelt and brushed them off. A stone crucifix. A stone Buddha. They were lying on their backs, staring up at the sky. Someone had been there since the search for her dad's body. Someone had visited. Someone had left the statues as a gift. Her mother. Only her mother would have brought a Buddha and a cross. When she said she'd never stopped loving Zoe's father, she'd been telling the truth. Then why wouldn't she let the police bring his body home? The statues seemed to have fallen from an outcropping of rock above the entrance to the cave. Zoe picked up the crucifix, shocked by the weight of it. She wiped it clean, then climbed up the rocks and set it back on its shelf. She did the same with the Buddha. The statues radiated calm and seemed to be urging Zoe to find some peace of her own. She wanted to say something. But what? She was still angry that her father had been so reckless. When he fell into the cave, it was like he'd pulled all of them down with him. But she did love him. Maybe there was a way to say all that? She closed her eyes and tried to find the words. "I love you for everything you were, Dad," she said finally. "I forgive you for everything you weren't." "P.S.," she added. "Jonah is going nuts without you. And I'm in love with somebody from out of town." She opened her eyes, wishing she could do more. An idea lit up her brain. She searched the ground and found a piece of bark in the snow. She asked Dallas to toss her the multi-tool knife from her pack. Zoe scratched and gouged at the bark for 5 minutes. By the time she was finished, she was sweating. Her arm was aching, and she'd started to lose the feeling in her hands. But she was proud of her handiwork. She set it on the ledge with the statues and took a selfie to text to Jonah later. She'd even put it on Instagram so the police would see it and know how serious she was about going into the cave, if she had to. She'd carved a message to her father into wood. "I will come back." 14. Dallas swore up and down he could drive the stick shift with just his left hand, but Zoe said she'd defied death enough for one day. She steered the Forerunner down the rutted roads and out of the wilderness. The instant they hit Columbia Falls and civilization, their cell phones finally picked up a signal, as if they'd just splashed down from space. Zoe pulled over to text her mother. Seeing the Buddha and cross her mom had left at the cave had softened her a little. She wasn't ready to forgive her mother entirely, but she figured she deserved to know that she was okay. So she texted her the same one-word message she'd sent on the night of the blizzard. Safe. As she pressed send, she felt not just deja vu, but amazement at everything that had happened since she saw X hurtling toward her and Stan across the ice. Her mother answered before Zoe even had a chance to put the phone back on Dallas's dashboard. "Thank God," she wrote. "Thank every God. OX." OX was her mom's version of XO. Zoe had begged her to stop using it because every time it popped up on her phone, she thought, for a split second, that her mother was calling her an ox. "I'm still pretty pissed at you," Zoe texted back. Her mother began typing. "The person is typing, dot dot dot," bubbled up. As always, it seemed to promise something profound. "I know you are, Zoe. I get it. And don't blame you. I've been a wreck. So worried about you getting hurt that I haven't been able to eat, breathe, operate heavy machinery. I'm at the hot springs. Come and let me hug you? Maybe. Not sure. Let me see if I can get unpissed. Please, please, please. Okay, okay, I will. Just so you don't start sending me emojis. OX, as you would say. Thank you. And do not make fun of the ox." Piping Hot Springs was a run-down old place nestled in a hillside above Flatland Valley. It boasted two pools. Literally, there was a sagging banner out front that read, "We have two pools." Both were outdoors and fed by rejuvenating, mineral-enriched waters that shot up through the earth. One was an ordinary-looking swimming pool kept at 84 degrees. The other, a giant, kidney-shaped, concrete-bottomed lake, was always precisely 104 degrees. Zoe's mom was a conscientious manager, but the owners lived out of state and were always on the verge of selling the business and didn't want to sink any more money into it. So every season, Piping Hot Springs looked a little grubbier, a little more desperate. The green fiberglass slides were rickety and rusted. The colored pennants decorating the walls were faded. The enormous 70s-style digital clocks were all malfunctioning so that, rather than telling the time, they seemed to be making announcements in Chinese. These days, the rich tourists all went to spas where they got microfiber bathrobes and shiny wire baskets with lotions and loofahs. The more adventurous tourists drove up to Canada, where hot swirling pockets of water appeared, as if by magic, in the middle of freezing rivers. Piping Hot Springs mostly attracted elderly couples who sat against the wall of the big pool with their arms draped sweetly over each other's shoulders. There were also some European tourists, and some drunk 20-somethings who thought the place was hysterical. Zoe would have been embarrassed about Piping Hot Springs, except that she'd never seen anyone leave without looking blissed out and dreamy and pink. The waters worked. It was early evening by the time Dallas had his wrist wrapped at an urgent care place on the highway, and then dropped Zoe off at the hot springs. Zoe caught her reflection in the door on the way in. She looked like hell. Beneath X's overcoat, her clothes were wrinkled and torn. Thanks to the caving helmet, her hair looked like roadkill. Her mom sat perched behind the front desk, folding towels and watching for her. She stood up the minute Zoe stepped inside. They inched toward each other shyly, like a couple that's forgotten how to dance. Zoe let herself be hugged but made a point of not hugging back. Her mother ignored the awkwardness. "Oh my God, that coat," she said. "Is that X's?" "Yeah," said Zoe. "It heals you. The minute you put it on, it starts, like, erasing your bruises and mending your bones." "Seriously?" said her mother, her eyes wide. "No, it's just a coat," said Zoe. "It's super warm, though." Her mother laughed and swatted her on the shoulder. "Look, I need to apologize to you," she said. "Come fold some towels with me and let me try." They sat with a basket from the dryer between them. Zoe remembered folding towels with Bert after he'd become senile. He'd been obsessed with how warm and fluffy they were, how clean they smelled. She had to stop him from shoving his face into them. "So," her mother said now, "do you want the short, medium, or long apology?" "Start with the short one," said Zoe. "I love you, and I'm sorry," said her mother. "Not feeling it," said Zoe. She smoothed a towel with her hand. It crackled with electricity. "Try the medium one. I love you, and I'm sorry. And I was wrong to tell the police to leave your dad's body in the cave," her mother said. "Why did you?" said Zoe. "I don't get it," her mother sighed. "I'm just going to blurt it out, like you would, okay?" she said. "I think maybe your dad killed himself, Zoe." Zoe said nothing. "He was really unhappy toward the end," her mother continued. "He felt like a failure. He hated who he was. And he thought I'd stopped loving him, which... it kills me that he thought that." She paused. "I'm only telling you all this because you've asked me so many times, and I think you can handle it." "I can," said Zoe. "Don't stop. Look, I don't know anything about caving, but it seems like he was too smart to die in some freak accident," her mother said. "So I thought maybe he killed himself, and I didn't." She paused again and pressed her hands against her eyes. "I didn't want the cops to go in there and prove I was right." Zoe leaned forward. She hugged her mother for real this time. "I know Dad wouldn't have done that," she said. "He just messed up. He stopped to take a picture, and he fell. When I was in the cave today, I could picture exactly what happened. I could feel it." Her mother nodded. "I'm sure you're right," she said. "I want you to be right." "I am right," said Zoe. "So you'll tell the police to go get him now?" "I kicked ass today, but it was scary as shit. And Silver Teardrop is nothing compared to Dad's cave. I don't actually want to die doing this." Before her mother could respond, an elderly, German-sounding couple came through the door. Zoe's mom took their money and handed them flip-flops, towels, and locker room keys. She and Zoe watched them shuffle down the stairs, arm in arm, and didn't speak until they descended out of sight. "I'll talk to the police," she told Zoe. "I promise I will. And I'm sorry I didn't tell you all this sooner." She paused. "Being a grown-up is the worst," she said. "You'll be better at it than me. I can already tell." Her mother's shift was supposed to end at 6 o'clock, but at 5:58 an employee she referred to as the Flaker called to say that he had weird spots on his tongue, and was it cool if he bailed? Her mom was exhausted. She didn't even have the energy to brush her hair back when it fell in her eyes, and her shoulders sagged at the news. Zoe was still on a high from crushing Silver Teardrop. She offered to cover the shift herself. Her mother did the whole, "I couldn't ask you to do that thing," but Zoe said, "Shut up. I'm doing it. Shut up. I'm doing it." And so on until her mother gave in. Zoe's mom told her the pools were basically empty. There was the German couple, who were now making out in the big pool, and a single dad throwing a birthday party for his beastly 6-year-old daughter in the smaller one. She reminded her that there was a lifeguard on duty at each pool, and that if she couldn't find Lance, the security guard, he was probably in the locker room doing Pilates. Her mom told her that she could close up early if the place emptied out, and, on a sort of creepy note, that she should watch the security monitors because they'd been having some sneak-ins. "There's one other thing," she said. She opened her laptop, which lay on the desk in front of Zoe. I was going to let this wait until morning because I wasn't sure you could handle it after the cave and everything. But you're going to want to see it. Zoe's mother called up a news story. She swiveled the computer toward Zoe and took a step back. It looks like X found Stan, she said. Zoe's eyes raced over the article. A man murdered in a hair salon in Wheelwright, Texas, earlier this week has been identified as Stan Mangold. Mr. Mangold, 47, was a native of Virginia. He was wanted by police. The coroner's report indicates that Mr. Mangold died of blunt force trauma to the neck when his body was thrown headfirst into a mirror above one of the stylist's stations. Hairdressers describe the assailant as an agitated, black-haired Caucasian between the ages of 18 and 21. He was said to be wearing dark boots, black pants, and a purple cowboy shirt. Police have released an artist's sketch, but have no leads at this time. Purple cowboy shirt, thought Zoe. She clicked on the link to the sketch. The mouth was all wrong. The eyes didn't have enough depth. Still, there was something about the drawing. The long, wavy hair, the bruises on the cheekbones, that evoked X so powerfully that Zoe felt the blood rise in her cheeks. She shut the computer and pushed it away. It's over now, her mother whispered. The craziness is over. X, the cave, everything. We're going to be okay. But Zoe didn't want the craziness to be over. She wanted X back. She couldn't help but hope that now that the Lords had Stan in their clutches, they might let X out to hunt more souls. Zoe's mom told Zoe she'd pick her up later and left her sitting behind the desk idly eating yogurt pretzels and watching the bank of snowy, out-of-date security monitors. The single dad ushered the flock of 6-year-olds into the night. The old German couple eventually wandered out too, the wife's hand on the husband's butt. Nothing else happened for hours. Zoe sent Val 10 texts to pass the time. 3 of them were about caving, 5 were about X, and 2 were about yogurt pretzels. Val must have been with Gloria. On the weekends they often got in bed with a ton of food, hacked into Val's brother's Tinder account, and swiped right on all the girls they thought were hot. Because she wrote, "Can't talk," and, when Zoe wouldn't leave her alone, "New phone, who dis?" After that, it seemed as if even time itself had gotten itchy and bored and decided to nap. Zoe padded down the damp hallway toward the pools and told one of the lifeguards he could go home. That killed about 10 minutes. She returned upstairs and stretched her legs, which ached from the cave. That killed about 8. As Zoe dragged herself back to the front desk, she cast her eyes over the monitors. Everything was empty. The halls and stairways were newly mopped. The vending machines glowed silently. A ghostly cloud of vapor hung over the pools. She was about to sit when her eye caught on something. The upper left-hand monitor. The big pool. Somebody had snuck in. The man's back was to her. He was in the water, but wearing a knit hat pulled down low over his ears. The tiniest bit of scruffy hair spilled out from under it. Zoe called Lance on the locker room phone. He sounded out of breath from Pilates, as her mother had predicted, and told him to kick the guy out. She checked the monitor again. She saw Lance come into the frame and call out to the guy in the water. The guy didn't move. He ignored Lance entirely, which was not a thing Lance sat still for. Lance was a preposterously big, broad dude. He lived for confrontations. His only complaint about being a security guard was that no one had the guts to stand up to him. More than once, Zoe had seen him swat at a fly and say, "Yeah, you better run." She watched as Lance went to the edge of the water and knelt on one knee, like the former football player that he was. Zoe closed her eyes. She just wanted to go home. She didn't want to watch Lance administer a beatdown. When she opened them again, she got a jolt. Lance was staring right at her in the security camera. His face filled the screen. He gestured for her to come down to the pool. Zoe's stomach clenched. She slipped on X's coat, locked the front door, and walked to the stairs as slowly as she could. By the time she made it outside, the stranger had swum to the far side of the pool. He was obscured by the darkness and the rising steam. He was just an outline, really. A head, shoulders, and hat glinting above the water. Lance stood by the door, looking annoyed.
"What's going on?" said Zoe.
"The dude says he knows you," said Lance.
Zoe peered at the man in the water. The mist looked eerie tonight. It curled around him like a wreath, as if he'd summoned it. She didn't know the guy, no way. She was about to tell Lance to get rid of him when the stranger spoke. He said just one sentence, but it stopped her cold.
"Your name's Zoe, and you love X."
Zoe walked slowly around the pool. She drew near to the man. He had dropped some clothes by the water. She couldn't quite make them out in the dark. They lay tangled like a nest of snakes. She tried to think of something to say, but the stranger spoke up again and stunned her a second time.
"That's X's coat, right?" he said. "Kinda big for you."
She crouched for a better look at his face. He was in his late 20s, handsome in a battered sort of way, but shaky somehow, unhealthy. The whites of his eyes were streaked with red. He smiled up at her. His friendliness made him seem all the more menacing. She inspected him closely without speaking. He had dark, crescent-shaped bruises near his eyes. They looked like X's bruises.
"Who are you?" she said.
"I'm Eric," he said.
"Sup?"
The sunniness of his voice was freaky. X never mentioned anybody named Eric, she said.
"X doesn't use my real name," he said.
He drew an arm out of the water. He had a wild sleeve of tattoos almost identical to X's, and lifted his hat the tiniest bit. Zoe winced. His forehead was horrifically bruised.
"He calls me Banger."
"He'd come with a message from X," he said. Zoe couldn't tell from his face if it was good news or bad. The anticipation was awful. She told Lance and the remaining lifeguard that they could leave. They looked shocked. Still, they reluctantly headed up the stairs. Zoe waited for Banger to speak, but he seemed to enjoy her impatience. He was an odd sight in the water. He'd taken off his shirt, but he was still wearing his hat and his jeans, which were so drenched they clung to his legs. He floated on his back to the center of the pool and gazed up at the bright needlework of stars.
"What's the message?" said Zoe. "Tell me."
Banger smiled and floated even farther away in the dark, his white belly shining. He never took his eyes off the sky. She followed him around the pool, picking up dirty towels and stray flip-flops as she went.
"Don't mess with me, Banger," she said. "I don't care if you're dead. I will seriously injure you."
"Can I just swim one more minute?" he said. "You know how long it's been since I've felt warm water?"
Zoe felt a twinge of sympathy. She straightened a row of white deck chairs that should have been trashed years ago and went inside. After 10 minutes, Banger climbed out of the pool, put on his shirt and shoes, and joined her. He'd pulled his hat back down over his nightmarish forehead, but he still looked feverish and sickly to Zoe. And then it struck her. He had the trembling. "You're supposed to be hunting somebody?" she said. He turned to her, surprised. He wiped the perspiration from his face with the back of his hand.
"Yeah," he said quietly. "Guy who drove a school bus while he was high on crack. I'll spare you the details."
He drifted around the lobby, inspecting every poster, every piece of furniture, and every knick-knack to see what they could tell him about the years that had passed since he was yanked down to the lowlands. Zoe wished everything in the place wasn't so shabby and old. She asked if he wanted